Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Haw, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
To be honest, I don't know. I'm just going to keep doing my job. The way I play is not going to change. That's on everybody's work ethic and job. We had to win as a team, but also I cannot ask everybody to play like I do, or to play like Bias and I play. Everybody's different. I know that they might be tired, but I mean, I'm here to win. I'm here to win. I'm here to compete, and that's what I like to have from everybody else.
I think the message with however, like, you know, I don't know how the questions were framed and all those things, but I think the message was a little misinterpreted in the context of what I heard him talk about today.
How would you summarize?
I don't think it's effort. Sorry. I don't think it's a focus. I don't think it's, these guys are giving effort. There's no doubt about that. And these guys work and prepare. I see it daily. I think there's a sense of just making sure where, when things are going bad, coming together is really important.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And you heard the voices there. First, Wilson Contreras with his complaints that not everybody has the same energy as he and Baez do. And the idea that you got a dead-ass team here somehow, except for him and Javi. And then you heard David Ross tell you, well, that's not what he really said. That's not what he meant. And this has nothing to do with effort or
energy. Of course not.
Here.
No. Yeah. Us? No. Who, us quit? No.
You misinterpreted exactly what he said. I think we just played what he said. I don't think there's any misinterpretation.
No, not at all. There's no ambiguity there.
None.
Look, let me ask you this. Do you see a connection between Jed Hoyer on Thursday, essentially announcing the end of the season, right? The games this year no longer matter. What takes priority after Thursday was the Cubs are sellers. They've picked a lane. They have put the future ahead of the present. And what's happened since that point? They've lost two or three games and they've gotten shut out twice. Do you see a connection between those comments, the public declaration of surrender, essentially, and the Cubs doing what they did over the weekend?
I don't see I don't see Wilson responding to what he heard from the team president. I don't think that's what it is. I think he's responding to what he's seen from his teammates.
Do you think what the way they've played, though, is a response, subconsciously or otherwise, to the fact that your team president essentially said the season's over?
I think the way they played led the team president to say the season's over. And I think that the fact that they were as inconsistent after he said that as they were is emblematic of why the season is over. They you know, this was not out of character for the Cubs. What we've seen from them is an 11-game losing streak.
Right.
And I think Ross is right. I think there were a couple of games in there, and I believe you heard this from Jed Hoyer. There were a couple of games in there they could have won, and they lost a couple 3-2 games or whatever it was, and they probably shouldn't have had that kind of losing streak. But when you are losing in that fashion, it's hard. It's hard to look like a big energy team and a team that's playing with
great verve. You're never going to be able to do that when you're losing. When you're not scoring runs, you look like you could care less and you're not doing anything. The fact that Contreras is willing to step up and call it out, it tells you a couple things. It tells you that there is a great frustration level, certainly with him. It suggests that he and Baez have talked it over because they're the guys that are trying hard.
He was mentioned
name. And it suggests that you feel like there's a lot of dead arse performances from some of the other major stars on the team. And I think Anthony Rizzo is the number one guy he's calling out, frankly. I think Jason Hayward hasn't played well really since he's been here. But Rizzo's not having a great year, and he's in and out of the lineup. And maybe he included Bryant. But if I'm Bryant, I'm getting ready for the All-Star game. I mean, he's had a hell of a first half. I get it. He's fallen off where he was. But he did have a couple of nice months there.
I also think that David Ross, who I think was called out, probably felt like he was being called out by his player. But he didn't have his players back, and he could have just said, you know,
Wilson's frustrated.
Wilson's frustrated. We're all frustrated. We're going to deal with it and move on.
Yeah. But he didn't.
He didn't say that.
He said he's wrong.
He said he's wrong.
Yeah.
And he did not have his players back.
He's wrong that we're trying hard. We're a good team. And guess what? He shouldn't have said that.
Yeah. He made him feel like the manager did not have his back, and he is arguably the Cubs' most valuable player this year because of what he means to the franchise. And it, moving forward, projecting on the next great Cub team, if Wilson Contreras is your catcher and David Ross is your manager, how well will they get along? Is this going to be a blip, or is this something that could point to something deeper? I don't know. I think they could probably both get past this, but I do think it indicates and it suggests just how tenuous the relationships and the camaraderie and the chemistry is in that Cub clubhouse.
312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. And we should tell you the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. And you can check it out at Odyssey. And all sorts of stuff waiting for you there. Let's try Randy. Randy's in Kenosha. Hey, Randy.
Hello. Just a couple things here. First of all, scoring 10 runs, sandwiched between two shutouts, that's what this team has done for 4 years. We know they can't hit, right? At the end of the day, their average numbers are good, but essentially they can't hit. And then second of all, they have like the last 12 games before the trade deadline or 13 games, whatever it is against the Cardinals, which aren't very good, the Diamondbacks, who are historically bad, and then like a three-game or four-game set against the Reds at home. The Cubs could be 3 to 4 games above 500 by then, and the Brewers are not that good, and you're going to be back to being in a buyer mode. So all this hand-wringing that you're going to sell everybody, I don't necessarily think that's true. It's all kind of staged. We got 2 weeks left. You play it out.
Jed Hoyer announced that they were sellers. I don't know what else you need to hear. Is he lying?
His phone's ringing and he's talking to people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not selling, you're not taking the call.
And I don't know that they're good enough.
He said it would be irresponsible not to.
And do you look at this Cub team as being good enough to go on this sort of mini streak that you just described? I don't see it. I don't see it.
Well, I mean, no, I don't. And I think that, you know, when you really stop and think about what Wilson Contreras said and David Ross's reaction to it, was you got to ask yourself, if they played that game on Sunday, was that a benching? Was Contreras being benched for what he said? Because it's hard to look at it as a normal day off when he had a day off a couple games ago.
That's a heck of a response. That's an overreaction to me. If you were going to bench Wilson Contreras for speaking and voicing his frustration over something everybody's tired of watching, then I don't know why you would do that if you're David Ross, other than you must not consider Wilson Contreras a team leader. And if you don't, why? What else does he have to do?
I find it interesting, Peoria Matt Jackson, and this is fun. Sounds like they're lacking collaboration on the north side. I mean, it really is. This is the first time where we've seen a player speak out of turn publicly over something that has happened within the team. This is the first time. This is the first challenge that David Ross, I mean, it's one thing, don't get me wrong, losing 11 straight games is a challenge. Trying to figure out a way to come out of a tailspin is a challenge. But doing that amidst one of your star players telling everyone, you know what, we're a dead arse team and we're not trying hard enough and I'm good and so is Javi Baez, but that's pretty much it. That's effectively what the guy said.
Well, and as a manager, you got a couple choices. You can let it play out and you can prolong the situation and you can bench him punitively and you can say that you don't have his back publicly, or you can mask over it, say something that is very, very perfunctory and say you're going to move on and let him play, let him go into the All-Star break. And by Friday, it's a new day. Everybody's rested and refreshed and you move on. Right now, you're not in a position to move on because you have made a bad situation worse if you're David Ross.
And you've talked about it like it's family and we stay together and no matter what, we're a family. And yet the family has a little bit of issue here. The family has got a little bit of kind of dysfunction happening amidst it. We saw Rizzo and Wilson Contreras get into it a while back. I don't know we moved on. Everybody's friends.
I don't know that they moved on.
I don't either.
Doesn't look like they moved on.
It doesn't sound like
Remember when Tony La Russa called out Yermín Mercedes publicly? And this was a manager calling out a player. And what did the players in the clubhouse do? They rallied behind the player. They had his back. Now, it was against the manager. It wasn't that big of a deal as it turned out. But I guess that is the last time we heard such like a public rebuke of somebody in terms of their approach or in terms of it wasn't a matter of effort. It was a matter of, you know, respect in that case. But in this case, Wilson Contreras is questioning the effort, which I think that he has every right to do. He's in that clubhouse. He's been through this losing streak and manager let it. This is becoming a thing now because it wasn't put to rest.
Let's try Brian. Brian's listening online. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Contreras kind of maybe lost a couple of people there when he included Baez into his comments about hustle and intensity when Baez is having a bad year with strikeouts once again. And he's also had, as we all know, his lack of focus with base running or in the field play. So if Contreras wants to be the team leader, he just needs to make sure that he's being careful with how he chooses his words. So I don't mind Contreras being the team leader. Again, you just got to kind of be a little bit more careful with what you're saying.
That's fair.
Baez, like Contreras, has a 2.5 war. I mean, I don't know if you look at that or care about that, but I'm just saying that's different than a guy. What is Rizzo? We said 1.1, and what is Hayward?
0.7. Now, look, Anthony Rizzo, according to Baseball Reference, since June 16th, his batting average has dipped from 259 to 247, 212, 722 OPS versus right-handed pitching. It's just not a guy who has – he has one homer and two runs batted in since the middle of June.
He's got a bad back. Okay. His back is upsetting him. It's keeping him from playing as well as he can.
But I'll say this. I will agree with the caller because I do believe that when you – it raised my eyebrow when he mentioned Javi Baez as a model of intensity and focus because that isn't always the case with Javi. The only thing is he's been able to back it up with numbers that make him maybe a little bit more above reproach.
He's energy. He's got energy every day. He doesn't – even when he's striking out, he looks like he's energetic. He's running out to the field. He's, you know, El Mago. He's diving for a – to get a ball. He's still making a flash play. I just think that maybe that's what he means. Maybe he's very tight with Baez and didn't want to offend him and doesn't really care if he offends others. I don't know his relationships.
And we don't. And we're not going to have the sort of access to the clubhouse anymore. We're not privy to these relationships. But do you wonder about the David Ross, Wilson Contreras dynamic since I always will remember – in 2016, when Wilson Contreras came into that Cub clubhouse as a as a rookie, like he was shot out of a cannon, and he was so enthusiastic and so bold and so impulsive, and it was great because of the energy that he brought. And here was David Ross, the grizzled veteran catcher, who was here because he was John Lester's, you know, personal catcher, and he brought a lot to that team that nobody could ever diminish. But I always did wonder how well they meshed and what they thought of each other. And if David Ross, you know, look, you look at Wilson Contreras as the guy that once replaced him.
So all the good reasons that you hired him may be blowing up on this in this particular case.
No, I mean, they still stand, but I you always wonder. I mean, yeah. Your instinct is to have your players back, isn't it? Shouldn't it be? If you're a manager?
So let me ask you this. If they are a dead arse team, as they've been accused of being, who's that on? I mean, does the criticism of the energy and the try hard not reflect on the manager? Does he not have to defend himself at some point? Listen, we were talking about David Ross as manager of the year. And that wasn't very long ago.
Right. Before the losing streak. Jed Hoyer Jed Hoyer called him a star on Thursday. Uh-huh. When your boss considers you a star, you have job security. You can say whatever you want. So maybe he feels empowered to do that, but I just thought it was curious that he wouldn't back his guy rather than go the other way and kind of leave him twisting in the wind.
Again, you know, when you start losing, that's when the accusations of guys playing for themselves come up. That's when all of the dangerous stuff that you worry about comes up. It's a long season. If someone's playing a game of grab arse at first base with a player while you're losing, does somebody get upset about that? Does that frost someone? I mean, I don't know what fueled this outbreak. I know what fueled it, frustration.
Yes.
But it just seems like you would like to have put it to bed before you got to the break. That's all.
Especially because he was right.
Wow.
He was right.
I'm not arguing. I think that's awesome. I like that you said that. We'll ask John Heyman. Was he right? Can a team look dead even if they are not playing well? What's gone wrong with the Cubs from what John has seen? And does that change trade deadline talk? And do you have to ship out Willie now and maybe send him to the South Side for nothing just because they need a catcher? No, I was joking. Let's get ready for John Heyman. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Okay.
John Heyman.
Feels like an Arby's night.
MLB Network Insider. WFAN New York. Larry David Enthusiast. @ John Heyman on Twitter.
Pretty good.
John Heyman.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 in the Score. Always a joy to talk to John Heyman, and he joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. John, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're all fired up. I mean, I think that we're pleased on the South Side, and we're a little befuddled on the north side with Wilson Contreras kind of calling out his teammates, with David Ross kind of saying that's not true. And, you know, we've been talking it over. It looked like had they played the game yesterday, which again was rained out, and yet Contreras was not going to be in the lineup. And he just had a day off on Thursday. And now he's not going to be in the lineup before the All-Star break. That seemed punitive. But again, the game never happened, so we don't argue about it, I guess.
Well, I believe Wilson Contreras. You know, he sees what's going on. Of course, the manager has to say we're trying, we're putting in a good effort most times, because it reflects poorly on the manager if you're not putting in a good effort. And I got to say, I mean, I'm not there. But they should be a better team than this. I mean, you know, they had a weak schedule in July. We thought it was an opportunity for them, and instead it's become an opportunity to sell. So I think Wilson Contreras was onto something, and he probably hit a nerve with David Ross.
I'm sure that he did, John, because anybody watching the Cubs understands what he was talking about. So take us back to Thursday. You hear Jed Hoyer be as open and transparent as any sports executive as you would want. Talks about the Cubs being sellers. What's the market like for some of their the main four guys? Kimbrel, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and Javier Baez. Do you think that his phone was ringing a lot over the weekend?
Oh, that's the good news. I mean, they clearly have a great sale, assuming that they want to do it, and it appears that they certainly do. I appreciate Jed Hoyer's honesty. That's great. We got a couple of honest guys there, Wilson Contreras and Jed Hoyer. I mean, we knew kind of going in, if they were 500 or worse, they'd probably be a seller. They kind of signaled that with Darvish, but they do have a great sale. Kimbrel's market should be huge. I mean, the guy has performed this year, gotten his mojo back, shall we say. He has been really good, and the market is always going to be good for a closer. And, you know, there's teams that are going to be looking for a closer, no question about that. I mean, he helps any bullpen. That's the thing about a closer, who's a good one, you know, he's going to help any pen. Bryant, I think, has a good market. Baez would have a good market. And, you know, Rizzo, I still don't believe that they'll trade him. I think he's a Cub, and we shall see. I mean, you know, maybe he doesn't mind at this point the way the Cubs are doing. Maybe he wants to try to win this year. So, you know, maybe he'll be okay with it. But I just feel like they're going to keep Rizzo long-term. We shall see. No guarantees here.
And John, on the opposite side of town, the White Sox go into the break in probably the best position in baseball. They got to feel pretty good about their standing in the division, 8 games clear, about the fact that there doesn't appear to be a team capable of breathing down their neck. And meanwhile, they're 18 games over. They just swept a team that you're supposed to sweep, and you got to feel good about the situation they're in despite all the injuries.
Yeah, about 4 weeks ago, I was on with you guys and guaranteed they'd win that division. I mean, it's just set up perfectly for them. Their pitching is outstanding. They've overcome the injuries. You know, they've filled in a good outfield somehow, despite what we think are very, very detrimental injuries. They've done a great job. And look, Cleveland is the best threat to get them in the division. And I believe that they're going to sell. We'll see. They're still kind of weighing things, but they might not call it a sell. They always, you know, they always compete. I got to give them credit. They try to thread that needle, but look, they traded Clevenger last year. They traded Lindor. You know, they've taken steps back, and I think that's what's going to happen. I actually texted a White Sox exec, have you heard that the Indians might sell? And he said, no, but they could be my guest. They're happy. He's happy to have them sell. You know, it makes sense. You know, their position is outstanding right now. But, you know, if the Indians sell, it becomes a really 100% situation for them in that division.
John, if the White Sox are aggressive buyers, which of the three is most likely to end up on the south side? Adam Frazier, Eduardo Escobar, or Trevor Story?
You know, I'm going to say I think Story would be the least likely. I mean, I wonder what his camp would say about, you know, going into free agency and being traded and becoming a second baseman. Of course, they don't really have a say in it, but you don't want to acquire an unhappy player, and particularly an expensive unhappy player. You know, I'm going to guess Frazier. He's the best fit. Second base is really their need. You know, he's really the best fit for me. But, you know, I'm sure Pittsburgh is holding out for a Vaughn or a Kopech or a Crochet, somebody on the roster currently who's young and cheap, rather than a group of prospects. But ultimately, that's the best fit, I think, Frazier.
Would you trade one of those guys for that player if you felt he was putting you over the top? I would not trade Kopech, and I wouldn't trade Vaughn. So nope. That's Crochet, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I would say probably so. I mean, you know, Rick Hahn's a better negotiator than I am, so I'm going to say he does it without him. But I you know, I want to win. I probably would. Yes.
What are you looking forward to most at the All-Star game in Denver and there's the festivities, John? Is the White Sox here, they have four representatives, Tim Anderson added to the mix, a deserving candidate. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I mean, the White Sox deserve all their candidates. They've had a great first half, and congratulations to them. And all the talk about Tony La Russa, he's doing really well. All-Star game, it's got to be Shohei Ohtani. He is the star of the first half. I almost think he's overlooked to some degree because maybe the West Coast thing, maybe the team not in contention. I mean, this is a historic run that he is on. I mean, he's on pace for about 60 home runs at this point. Incredible for a pitcher. It's hard to even fathom. And they are long home runs. And, you know, he loves baseball, and he's not in it for the money. I mean, he's probably the most underpaid player in baseball at this point. And, you know, signed a two-year deal. He'll be the most underpaid next year, too. And he hasn't said a word about it. He wants to be in the Derby. He wants to pitch in the game. I mean, you know, you got to give this guy credit. He really loves the game, and he's really enhanced it. And he's doing something we've never seen. And those home runs in the Home Run Derby and in the thin air in Colorado might be something to see.
Yeah, that's going to be must-watch tonight. I've heard tons of people predict that Ohtani wins this, and this is kind of his national coming-out party, if you will. And then I've heard somebody suggest that Trevor Story, well, he knows the ballpark. What? Like, is that really a thing?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think everybody knows the ballpark now. You know, everybody knows the ball flies. And I think they're an advantage to be a right-handed hitter. So you might give a right-hander a little bit of an edge there. I don't think there's a home field advantage in the Home Run Derby. I think you are correct there.
John, we talk about obviously from a Chicago perspective, the White Sox are experiencing the best of times and the Cubs the worst at the moment. When you look around the league at the All-Star break, who's the most disappointing team and maybe your biggest surprise?
The most disappointing, my God, it's got to be the Twins, but they've got some competition. I mean, there are some real underachievers this year. We've got the Twins. You know, you've got the Yankees, the Braves, the Phillies. I mean, the list goes on. I could go on. I'm shocked by some of these teams. I mean, I could say if you're in New York, you'd say the Yankees. But, I mean, the Twins are just terrible, and it's shocking. I thought the White Sox would win that division, but I thought the Twins would be a contender. You know, I guess you got to go with the Red Sox and the Giants. And I don't think either one of those teams is a fluke. The Red Sox had a good nucleus. They had injuries last year. You know, they filled in with some versatile players. They've gotten some health back. They may get Sale back, a guy you may be familiar with. And I don't think they're a fluke. I really don't. And the Giants, same thing. Their pitching is excellent. They make great moves in the winter, one-year deals for all these pitchers. Everybody on their roster but three is a free agent after the year. And maybe that gives them incentive. I don't know. But they've got the nucleus has won three times, Belt, Crawford, and Posey, and they're all having terrific years. Belt hurts at the moment, but all having terrific years. There's two teams that are pleasant surprises and a long list of disappointments. But maybe that's my personality. I don't know. Disappointments everywhere.
John, we had an argument earlier because we're looking at Eloy Jimenez, and he is making his comeback, his rehab in Winston-Salem in Class A, and he homered in his first game back. He was DHing. Then he moved into the outfield, and he got on base three times. I think he had a single and a couple walks, but he also made an error in the outfield. And I like that they're going to play him a little bit in the outfield. And David thinks that's insane, but I don't know that it's a lock. I don't know that he's the kind of guy that wants to be a DH. If he comes back and is going to feel in any way upset that he isn't playing left field. I'm not saying he's a lock in that spot, but there's nothing wrong with versatility. And maybe you rehab them in two different ways, both in the outfield and in as a hitter.
Yeah, I mean, as long as he's healthy, I think the outfield is fine. You know, I mean, from a distance, I'm a little concerned, but they know much better than I do how healthy he is, and they must feel that he's perfectly healthy to play the outfield. I impressed by the, how they filled in the outfield after losing their two best outfielders and DFAing their other starting outfielder. They've done well in the outfield, so they're not desperate, and their DH situation isn't completely settled, so it wouldn't bother me if he's a DH, but I'm the nervous type. I see disappointment everywhere, and I'm the nervous type. So.
Before we let you go, John, obviously the Phillies ran into a situation on Sunday. They had to scratch Aaron Nola, and they had four players end up on the COVID list, a virus-related injured list, because of the outbreak on their team. Boy, how many teams are left that haven't met that threshold, and is that just the latest reminder that this is not quite over just yet?
Yeah, for me it is, and it's also a reminder that these players need to get their vaccinations. I mean, it's not a liberal or democratic statement to get your vaccination. I know some people look at it that way, and you know, the reality of it is, if you're unvaccinated and you're a close contact, you're going to be sitting. And that's why we have a whole group of players on the Phillies sitting. If they'd been vaccinated, it doesn't matter how close you were to somebody, you are allowed to keep playing. That's the way baseball is doing it. And they are one of seven teams that has not reached that threshold. So they have several players, star players, who are not vaccinated. In fact, I mean, I don't have a list, but I've heard that almost all of their stars are unvaccinated, and that they're taking a risk with their season, in my mind, because even if you don't get COVID, if you're just close to somebody who does, you're going to have to sit. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. So, I mean, the Phillies are a disappointment anyway. Maybe they're not really a contender. That whole NL East is a mess, and maybe they are not in position to take advantage anyway, the way they've played defensively, but it's a mistake not to get the vaccination. If you're in baseball, it's not a political statement. You don't want to be quarantined when you're not ill.
And John, we'll let you go. We talked about it earlier in the week. That's got to be a consideration at the trade deadline, because the last thing you want is to trade for someone, then find out that they can't be there for you when you get to the playoffs.
Or they put your team in jeopardy.
They put your team in jeopardy, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you know who's been vaccinated and who's not, I mean, I don't know. There are some players. Rizzo has come out and said he's not doing it, right? But there aren't very many players who've been that open about it. So I don't think it's public information, but I think people know that the Philly stars are not vaccinated, and it is an added risk. I would agree with you.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Thanks, John.
Great talking to you guys. See you later. You,
that's John Heyman, of course, our baseball insider, Mr. Odyssey insider. Fun to talk to John, as always. We're going to bring in Amy Dash next. There is a very disturbing story in baseball that we're going to pick apart a little bit with Amy. Mullenhall on the Score.
And I listened to Amy Dash, who's on Fox Sports Radio all the time, one of the smartest people in the world. And she says, you know, listen, it breaks down like this for me, is that just because there was consent doesn't mean that these injuries, you can just wipe them away.
Mullenhall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. That was from the Dan Patrick Show, Jason Smith talking about Amy Dash, and we're delighted to welcome Amy to the program. Amy Dash is Odyssey's legal insider. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. You're listening to Mullenhall. We're delighted to welcome Amy to the HomeRunIn.com hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit HomeRunIn.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Amy, good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that kind introduction.
Well, it was interesting to hear what they were talking about, and that, of course, is Trevor Bauer. And we know that that he had a disciplinary week off just so they could continue to investigate. They contact the union. It's another week. It's extended out. I think Dave Roberts said initially that he didn't know if he'd be back for the Dodgers, and it seems like that's a pretty fair assessment of the situation, although he's trying to back off from that comment. What is your take on what's going on with Trevor Bauer?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to note that he's on administrative leave. Right. So he hasn't been disciplined yet, and he hasn't been charged with anything, and he's innocent until proven guilty. So I think it's really important to preface with that. I think that it's going to be difficult for him, given that there's so many pictures of this woman and medical reports. And, you know, she really went to the hospital and documented what happened to her. And whether, you know, his attorneys came out with a statement saying that this was a rough sexual encounter and that she had asked for certain things and he had done them. And that's sort of the defense so far as to all these allegations against him. And I think, you know, depending on whether this actually gets charged and it goes into a court and there are any type of criminal charges, which there aren't yet, I think it could be tough because generally speaking, under the law, consent is not a defense to serious injuries. So if in fact she has incurred serious injuries, and you know, that's, I guess that would be up to a jury and up to the law in the state, it could be a difficult case to defend.
So Amy, as this evidence begins to mount and we start to see some of the extent of these injuries, where does this begin to become a criminal matter, and where does this, in terms of the investigation, stand if it is indeed going that direction?
Well, so far we've heard, at least from her side, that there's a police investigation, and some people I've spoken with are aware of a police investigation. And so far that's been pretty quiet. So we would have to wait for the police to complete their investigation. And then if they feel that the evidence is sufficient, they would go over to the district attorney and recommend or hand over that evidence. And the district attorney would then have the purview to decide whether to charge Trevor Bauer. And I think whether or not there are criminal charges is really key here. Of course, Bauer could also try to settle any type of allegations with his accuser. And then perhaps if she doesn't cooperate with a police investigation, usually it's harder to bring any charges. And so a lot of times with those cases, the police won't even move forward and the DA won't even move forward if the victim's not cooperating.
Now, I'm making an assumption here that there is a morals clause in his contract that if indeed he is charged, and I don't know, does he have to be convicted? How would a morals clause work if they wanted to get out of that deal?
Usually with a morals clause, you don't need conviction because it's usually a very, very general, broad clause where, you know, it's anything that could reflect poorly on the club from a moral standpoint. So even allegations, you know, depending on whether the club feels that they, you know, reflect poorly, that could qualify too. But I think what's key here is that the MLB discipline policy says that the commissioner has to handle any type of discipline and that the club really can't discipline at all until the commissioner has completed an investigation and decided whether he's going to discipline at his level. And then if he gives the club the okay to say, okay, now you can discipline as well, then the club can take action. But prior to that, the club really isn't allowed to do anything.
Amy, when you see the players' union and Major League Baseball agree on something, you know that the evidence has to be somewhat damning, or that is the implication. And certainly you have connected the dots as well as anybody who's talking about this story has. What's been the reaction to the way that you have, you know, spoken about this in the way, from what I understand, you've had some pushback from the Bauer camp. Is that correct?
Oh. Well, you know, I wrote an article and the PR team did contact, you know, the publication where I wrote, and they really wanted to get their side of the story out. And so we published their statements in full under my article. My article was an editorial. It was opinion based. And it was just generally speaking about the fact that in these types of cases, if this were to go to, you know, trial, consent would not be a defense, generally speaking, to somebody who's seriously injured. That's just the law as it stands today in most jurisdictions, if not all jurisdictions, is that if you claim consent and your alleged victim has serious injuries, consent is usually not a defense to serious injuries. Now, of course, it has to be determined if this woman's injuries are serious and he hasn't been charged with anything. But, you know, his camp really wanted their side of the story out. And so I said I'd love to interview him or his speak to his PR people or attorneys and sort of write an article based on his side of the story because he hasn't been able to speak yet. And that's probably on the advice of his attorneys.
What question would you like to ask him? I mean, my God, Amy, you look at these photographs and it's horrific.
I think the photographs are disturbing. And so I would like to ask, I guess if I was going to interview him, I'd like to ask whether this alleged victim asked him to scratch her face, to punch her in the face, to punch her in the genitals. I mean, was there an agreement to do that? And in fact, was there a safe word? Because I had read in some of the documents supporting the temporary restraining order that she said that they had come up with a safe word. And so if somebody's unconscious, if that in fact happens, then of course you can't use your safe word, right? So I'm just curious about, you know, the details of that. And I think also his intentions are really important here. I think whether he intended to, you know, hurt this woman at all, if in fact, you know, that's what happened, I think that's critical too, because I think this is also an opportunity for people to learn that they may not be on the same page as the person that they're having a sexual encounter with. And I think that's the most important lesson here, is that not necessarily somebody, you know, aimed to hurt somebody, but were they just on different pages? And so what one person felt they were doing that, you know, what the other person would enjoy, but then the other person feels pain and is allegedly traumatized by it. That's a really important lesson for people to get out of this, is that there has to be communication and people have to figure out where the line is when they're in sexual encounters. Because obviously whatever goes on between two people behind closed doors, nobody really knows. Only those two people will ever know the truth.
So Amy, to summarize, in your best legal opinion, when you look at the three potential areas here, the legal outcome, the civil result, and then maybe the team or league discipline for Trevor Bauer, where is this headed?
Well, I think, like I said in the beginning, everybody needs to, you know that he's not been charged, right? So right now, I think the biggest concern is whether he'll play for the Dodgers and whether MLB will discipline him. And I think it really all depends on the outcome of their investigation. And their investigation will be informed by any potential criminal investigation. And then we'll see what happens. But like I said, there's always that wild card that these cases could be settled, as we see that they often are, especially with athletes who are worth as much money as him. They're ultimately usually settled, and then it becomes hard to get the cooperation of the accuser. So we'll have to see what happens. There's going to be a hearing where he'll have an opportunity to give his side of the story at the end of July. And so whether or not he'll testify and whether or not his lawyers will let him, because that could also be harmful to him if he says something that he's not supposed to, and then he's ultimately charged, what he says could be held against him. So it's sort of a catch-22 where he may not be able to say his side of the story yet. And then a judge will have to determine whether to keep the restraining order in effect.
Haven't they kind of released his side of the story? Didn't we understand that he claims consent? That's what his camp is. They haven't denied any of the allegations against him. He's just claiming that the victim, in this case, the woman involved, was basically they had agreed to this, and obviously she is at this point is claiming different. And I just wonder if, you know, you've written that consent is irrelevant, but I agree with what you're saying. It's going to be awful hard to convict on anything without any kind of testimony.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately, you know, if this were to ever go to trial, you would need medical experts to say how serious the injuries are and whether there was serious bodily injury here. And then you'd have to also see whether the district attorney would ever charge serious bodily injury, which is a crime from assault and battery. So I think that initially he came out and what you're saying is what I understood too. And I think what most people understood is that he was saying this was all consensual,
right?
And this was just rough sex, and everything that she experienced, she asked me for, and I complied. And then when his PR people reached out, they put forth a little bit of a, whether it was stepping back on that or trying to specify what that really meant. And they said, you know, just because we claimed that this was consensual doesn't mean that every single thing she's accusing him of, you know, is he's saying that he, that she consented to, you know. So they were trying to say, well, yes, broadly, this was a sexual encounter that was consensual, but that doesn't mean that everything that occurred was. So it got a little bit confusing. I think it was probably, it would have been a better legal tactic to come out and completely deny everything than to use a consent excuse, because it was confusing to people. And then it was like, well, was this just a consensual rough sex encounter in general? Or are you saying that she consented to having two black eyes and scratch marks on her face and all the other things that she alleges happened to her? So it was really confusing, because once everybody started talking about, well, that looks kind of extreme, her injuries. Did you do all that? You know, and he wasn't coming out and saying, no, I didn't.
Right.
That statement from the attorneys got a little confusing to people. Like, are you saying she consented to all of that? Or are you just saying that she consented in general?
Amy, thank you a ton for clearing this up. Really appreciate it. And we're going to be following that story.
Thanks,
obviously.
Amy.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
That was Odyssey Legal Insider Amy Dash. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.
Unsettling, unpleasant, ugly.
Let me tell you something. I mean,
big story in baseball, though.
You can't think about the guy the same way if you see the photo of the woman.
No. Just, I would agree with that.
It's just very hard to think about Troubling. The guy as anything other than a complete kind of dirtbag, frankly. All right, we're going to bring in Steve Stone. We're going to talk some White Sox baseball. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.